Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
KMOX.
Listen anytime, anywhere.
Get the radio.com app today.
Would you walk us through a typical day?
Burger King, Wendy's, and McDonald's.
Stop spending!
I'm president, and you're not.
This is the greatest country in the world. But we do have some really stupid people representing it from time to time.
I am proud to shut down the government. I will be the one to shut it down. I'm not going to blame you for it.
Now, Mark Reardon.
I don't think he's a smart person, but he's got a loud voice.
On KMOX.
Well, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, on a busy Wednesday edition of the show. I've got a bunch of moving pieces here. I'm going to try to bring something to you live in just a couple of minutes. I'm very curious about this. We have the new St. Louis County Prosecutor, Wesley Bell. I've kept an open mind about Mr. Bell. Never met him. We had him on the show a few months ago, but obviously ushered in when he won the race against Bob McCullough last year and promised a bunch of changes. So this is a police shooting where it's a little odd because the 37-year-old Ladue officer said that she shot this guy in, Ashley Hall, shot in Ladue by this police officer, and she says she was pulling her gun instead of her taser. So this was a shoplifting incident. The family doesn't even agree to that. They say, well, she wasn't shoplifting. She was buying balloons before she was shot. So she hasn't been charged with a crime, I don't think. The officer has not been charged of a crime, but we're going to find out a little bit more about that. And we may find that out here in just a couple of minutes. Kevin Killeen is on the scene, and we hope to bring part of the news conference to you live in just a couple of minutes here on KMOX. Outside of that, William Barr testifying on Capitol Hill. I have to be honest, right? Well, oftentimes I'm so bored by all this at this point, and I think a lot of people are too. You know, I don't think we're learning anything. Some of these questions are important. I'd like to focus on whether or not let's go to Lindsey Graham, because I think Lindsey Graham has the right approach here. And that's, are we going to look at some of the things that happened in the Obama administration and whether or not there were political motivations for investigating Donald Trump, the candidate? So that's what he's kind of going down the road of. Here's Lindsey Graham with Bob Barr this morning.
Did you consult Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein about the obstruction matter?
Constantly, yeah.
So was he in agreement with your decision not to proceed forward?
Yes.
Do you expect to change your mind about the bottom line conclusions of the Mueller report?
No.
Do you think he did a thorough job?
Yes, and I think he feels he did a thorough job and had adequate evidence to make the calls.
As to obstruction of justice, were you surprised he was going to let you decide?
Yes, I was surprised.
He couldn't decide about obstruction. You did. Is that correct?
That's right.
You feel good about your decision?
Absolutely.
So he got the questions out of the way that he wanted to ask, and a lot of the Democrats obviously going down a different rabbit hole than the Republicans here, but Lindsey Graham, and we'll talk about this with Josh Krasauer from the National Journal, who is inside the swamp, one of our go-to guys in Washington. He focused on Lisa Page and Peter Strzok and the text and the emails that they sent one another, the motivation for going after Trump.
October the 19th, 2016. Trump is a f***ing idiot. He's unable to provide a coherent answer. Sorry to the kids out there.
All right. You know what I'm going to do here? Hey, Dave, I'm going to take a break, okay? I want to get ahead of this just in case Wesley Bell comes on. So let me get ahead of this just a little bit here this afternoon. We'll come back. We'll have a little bit more of the audio from the hearing today. And also Josh is going to join me. I'm really looking forward to Joel Kotkin. Joel Kotkin, I came across a piece. He used to be a reporter for, I think he worked for the Washington Post. He's not a conservative. He's not on the right. He's on the left. He's a Democrat. But he sees some big problems with the way that the media is covering this president. And his, I think his explanation, his focus is pretty relevant here, especially because he's not someone coming at it from my perspective, certainly, or a lot of your perspective. He's on the other side, but he still sees problems. So we got that coming up here this afternoon. We are going to visit with my friend Joe Arnold down in Louisville to do a little preview of the Kentucky Derby this weekend. Joe, a TV and radio veteran, and the Derby is coming up on Saturday afternoon. We're not going to be in all likelihood on the air tomorrow and or Friday because of baseball. We got a game at Wrigley on Friday. They play the Nationals tomorrow. It's a 3 o'clock game. Dave, we'll have like, I think, 5 minutes in the 2 o'clock hour, right? I think I'll be able to sign on, say, hey, welcome. And then we have to go to the pregame tomorrow. But we'll talk about the Derby this afternoon. And I woke up this morning and I saw on social media, on Instagram, my friend Jessica Radloff. She's been on the program many times. She's from here in St. Louis. Huge Cardinals fan, huge Blues fan. She's the West Coast entertainment editor for Glamour. And she was posting some shots from the set of The Big Bang Theory last night. They filmed the final two episodes. It's a two-episode conclusion on May 16th after all these years and millions of dollars for the cast and the producers because the show is basically on every hour of the day somewhere, I think, right? But look, big show coming to a conclusion. Jessica in the room last night. She'll tell some stories in the 4 o'clock hour. We'll get to a break early. Wesley Bell coming up with some announcements and some decisions on the woman shot by that police officer outside the Schnucks in Ladue. That's coming up.
It's Mark Reardon now. Total Information PM starts at 4 with news, weather, traffic, and information you need on KMOX.
I'm trying to stall a little bit here because the Wesley Bell, this is what happens all the time. Wesley Bell is supposed to have a news conference. Kevin Killeen is on site. This has to do with the police officer who shot the woman who was shoplifting, allegedly shoplifting a couple of weeks ago, and some charges perhaps for the officer. We don't know exactly. Right now, that's sort of the buzz down in Clayton, and we are supposed to have access to Mr. Bell in a news conference here in a couple of minutes. So I have Josh Hawley coming up from, I'm sorry, well, I do have Josh Hawley. Josh Crosshour. My Josh is confused, coming up from Washington. And if we go to the Wesley Bell news conference, we'll have Josh on in the next hour. I had Josh Hawley on my mind because he is on the Senate Judiciary Committee. So I mentioned Lindsey Graham, and he's going down the path of the FISA warrant and whether or not there was political motivation on the part of the members of the Justice Department, the FBI, to investigate candidate Trump and then into President Trump. So Hawley firing away questions at Bill Barr this morning.
General Barr.
Well, I think my music's still playing. Hang on. Here we go.
General Barr, I commend your candor in calling what happened in 2016 what it is, which is spying the Trump campaign and spying on the President of the United States. I'd like to talk a little bit more about spying. Counterintelligence investigations like the one that we now know the FBI launched against candidate Trump and President Trump, those are designed to thwart spying and sabotage. Is that correct?
That's correct.
To your knowledge, has the FBI ever launched a counterintelligence investigation of another president that you're aware of?
Not to my knowledge.
So it's safe to say that to your knowledge, this move was completely unprecedented?
To my knowledge.
Would it be unusual, in your experience and to your knowledge, for FBI agents to hide the existence and results of an investigation, such an investigation, from their superiors?
Very unusual.
Yes. And in fact, that is indeed what press reports suggest happened here. When FBI officials hide investigations from superiors, is there anybody to hold them accountable? I mean, what happens in that instance?
There is no accountability.
This is one of those situations where I never understand why, and I get why the Democrats want their red meat on impeachment matters. And not to say that what Bob Mueller was investigating wasn't important. Certainly, I wanted to know whether there was collusion. There was no collusion. Obstruction of justice, a legitimate question. But so is motivations for FBI agents to investigate someone and to apply for FISA warrants, you know, because of politics. And, mainly politics. So Hawley keeps going here.
We know that former acting director of the FBI, Andy McCabe, he's publicly confirmed that he contemplated forcing the president from office using the 25th Amendment. To your knowledge, have FBI officials ever contemplated forcing any other president from office against his will using that provision?
Not to my knowledge.
The 25th Amendment contemplates the vice president taking over as president when the president is unable to act. Would you agree that that text contemplates physical ailments like a coma, mental incapacitation, not just political differences of opinion?
Yes.
Have you ever doubted, since you have been in your current position, whether this president is physically able, in a constitutional sense, to discharge the duties, his duties as president?
No.
Would you agree that discussions within the FBI of forcing the president out of office for political reasons gives the public, at best, reason to question what the FBI is doing and to fear that there may be abuses of power in that organization?
I think it gives reason to be concerned about those particular individuals that were involved. I don't attribute it to the organization.
So those are good questions, and we'll follow up a little bit here. And Wesley Bell's news conference may be just slightly delayed. We'll get my guest on, and if we have to, we'll just roll it back here for you at the bottom of the hour. Josh Krasauer from the National Journal with us this afternoon to talk a little politics, but maybe a little baseball, too. How are you, Josh?
Good, Mark. So you've got the bragging rights on the Nationals and the Cardinals. It feels like every time the 15th play, St. Louis comes out on top.
You sound like you were bracing for that a little bit. I text Josh on Monday night. Unbeknownst to me, you were at that game, and that was a bit of a comeback, although I was trash-talking you before the game was even over, which was a little risky on my part.
Yeah, well, look, the bullpen for the Nationals has been the weakness all year. So once they fall behind, as they did in that one bad inning, you realize that it's going to take a lot of offense to come back from that.
Man, you probably see the standings. We're pretty happy right now with the Redbirds. And I made a prediction last week. I'm going to stand by it. I don't think we're going to lose control of this division the entire year.
That's a gutsy prediction because the Brewers have a really good team. They're the champs, and for that lineup, I got to say your lineup is pretty solid top to bottom. And Marcell Ozuna looks like he might be an MVP candidate this year.
Well, I mean, we're shocked by that just because he wasn't an MVP candidate last year. But look, I don't know. We could slip out of the lead. I will tell you that prediction. You'll never hear about it again if it doesn't happen. But you will hear about it if it does happen, Josh. You can rest assured of that. Let's talk about Bill Barr and the hearing. Oh, and by the way, you say you're going to the game tomorrow, right?
I will be. Day game, 4:00 at this time.
So I'll be working from the golf course, I believe, tomorrow. So I'll be thinking about you.
All right. Hopefully we can get a win. Hopefully we'll salvage a win there.
Well, these next two, it was important for us to get those first two victories because you guys, well, Scherzer's going tonight, isn't he?
Yeah, Scherzer, right. And then we have Strasburg.
Enough said. You know how good those guys are. All right, Bill Barr's testimony today. To me, you know, these hearings get to be very repetitive, and there's grandstanding by both parties, so I don't know if we're learning anything today. I suppose one of the stories that have come out, and just to get your reaction on this, there was a letter, I guess, that was sent by Bob Mueller to William Barr expressing concern about the summary report that he issued a few weeks ago. Is that accurate?
That's right. I mean, the news came last night when we learned that Robert Mueller was not satisfied with how Attorney General Barr initially summed up in his four-page report what was in the Mueller report. And I think specifically the details he gave on the obstruction of justice part of the report, I think he was worried that it didn't reflect the reality of how Barr had communicated about it. So Barr's taken a pretty big beating from the Democrats on the Senate Judiciary Committee. He's had a really parse his words closely because it does seem like Mueller, despite any claims to the contrary, was not happy, and he felt that Barr was doing him a disservice.
Well, and those two guys, they don't have a bad relationship, right?
Well, we don't know about the personal state of their friendship, but they have been close. I mean, Barr was Mueller's boss back in the early 90s, serving as Attorney General, and I believe Mueller was the Deputy Attorney General back then. So they've known each other, the families have known each other for a long time, but I don't know how testy this relationship is now, especially since it seems like Barr was trying to, at bare minimum, trying to spin the report to the president's advantage and kind of selectively quote parts that were favorable to Trump while not giving the full picture in that initial summary report.
You know, but not unlike the Mueller report itself, Josh, I don't see this really changing any minds, and I'm not even sure they're getting to the bottom of anything right now.
Well, you know, Mark, the reality is, even with that favorable interpretation initially, it didn't help the president's job approval numbers. In fact, if you ask all the national polls, ask, you know, how did the summary report change people's perception of the president and Russia and all that? And if anything, it made things worse. So, you know, I don't think that it really made a difference, even though they were trying to prevent the most unfavorable details, even though Barr was kind of dismissed some of the most unfavorable details in the report. Look, in his job, the president's job approval rating in the last round of polls, since the report has come out, has actually hit pretty rock bottom within his presidency. So, you know, perception is often more important than reality. I think that's what Barr was trying to do, shape the perception of what was in the report and hope the details could really matter in the public's mind later on. I just don't think it really worked. And I think people's minds on Russian, the Mueller report and all this stuff have been pretty locked in for a long time.
Josh Krasauer with us from the National Journal in the Swamp this afternoon. So Lindsey Graham has been pretty tough on, his fellow Democrats this morning, and they've been, the Republicans have been trying to change the focus here, understandably so. They're going to what happened in the Justice Department, whether or not there was political motivation for investigating the candidate and then the president. He read, Lindsey Graham did, from Peter Strzok's email, text, and Lisa Page. We know all the story beyond that. There's an example right here.
October the 19th, 2016. Trump is a f***ing idiot. He's unable to provide a coherent answer. Sorry to the kids out there.
All right. So, you know, look, I think it is important to maybe bring some focus on the FISA warrant and what happened there. Who knows what the answers are, but why is that not appropriate right now?
Well, it is somewhat irrelevant to the topic at hand, which is, you know, how Barr kind of promoted and chose to explain the Mueller report and the tension between Barr and Mueller. I mean, there are a lot of other issues that relate to all this, and it's fair to bring up, but the issue that Democrats want to focus on, and frankly, the most relevant issue, is this conflict between Mueller and Barr. And, you know, Barr even testified previously on the Hill that he did not be that point blank about this. It did not say that Mueller disagreed with him and had any communications with Mueller where they were disputing some of the things that went on after Barr, you know, put out the summary report. So this is new information, and then Barr was not the most forthcoming witness when he was in front of Congress beforehand.
So let's shift to Joe Biden gets in the race officially. We all knew that he would. I think I saw one piece this morning, maybe up on Real Clear Politics, that said Uncle Joe's kind of operating like he already won the primaries at this point. But maybe that's what he has to do.
Well, Mark, we've got a lot of campaign to go. This is just the first week of the Biden campaign. But I will say that he's getting under President Trump's in a way that none of the other Democratic candidates have been able to. You know, whether it was his video launch where he talked about Charlottesville and Trump immediately responding and kind of saying things that probably aren't helpful to his political standing, and to the union endorsement from the firefighters. You know, Trump needs blue-collar support. He needs to dominate among that group of voters, and the fact that Biden seemingly has made at least some inroads with the leadership is a big sign that you know, not all as well if Biden is the nominee. So, you know, Trump is very attuned to his political future. Biden, on paper, offers a threat, and Trump has been tweeting away, showing that he does steer Joe Biden as a possible challenger.
How much do you think Bernie Sanders hurt himself? He doubled down yesterday on giving the right to vote to people like the Boston Marathon bomber. You know, if you're a felon, even if you did a heinous crime. There was a poll that was out from Quinnipiac that showed Sanders slipping to third place behind Elizabeth Warren. And one of the questions in that poll was, do you support or oppose allowing individuals who are currently in prison to vote? It was overwhelmingly against. I mean, not even close. I was shocked that he doubled down in the way that he did yesterday.
So this is the problem with Bernie Sanders' candidacy. I mean, he wasn't challenged as much by Hillary Clinton. Just didn't think he was going to win, and the media didn't really push him on a lot of these issues. Well, now he's under the spotlight, and now a lot of his socialist-minded policies are going to get a thorough degree of scrutiny from the press, and that was one example. So Bernie is fading. I mean, Joe Biden has opened up you know, had over a 20-point lead over Bernie when I was one national poll. Sanders is going to have his base of supporters, but his score might be a lot lower than we thought. And now that Biden is in the race, he's campaigning, he's winning over voters who may have, you know, been working class voters that like Bernie's message in 2016. But if you Biden is more electable and more experienced in this election, you know, Bernie is really going to have to expand or broaden his support, because he's not going to win with 15% of the vote.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Kentucky Derby this weekend, trying to finalize my bets. And if I had to play some bets right now, I think I would put Bernie and Joe Biden outside of my exacta.
Yeah, I think Bernie's losing a little bit of stock. I mean, Biden is now the front. It's fair to say that in a full of, you know, fairly underwhelming candidates, and Beto is fading, and a lot of other folks have not caught fire. I think Biden is a solid front runner. You know, Bernie, I think his stock is fading. I would, you know, maybe make a value bet on someone like Senator Harris.
Yeah.
I still think someone like Cory Booker could have a good moment at the debate and really catch fire.
But, I like you're throwing a little horse racing lingo in there. That's good. I like that.
But, yeah, I think one thing we learned about this week is it's indisputable that Biden is the front runner. Whether he can hold that lead, whether he can live up to that expectation the whole campaign, we'll see.
Josh, appreciate it. Enjoy the game tomorrow afternoon as the Cardinals wrap up the series with the Nationals. Tomorrow afternoon, my show will be preempted because of that, and we'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mark.
Josh Krasauer with us this afternoon. Always great to have him on, even though he is a Nationals fan. We have the news coming up next. I'll tell you, we got a little backed up here because we were waiting for Wesley Bell's news conference. Carol had the details there. Second-degree assault for the officer. This is a weird case because apparently, just to give you the basics of it, you had someone that rolled an entire cart full of groceries, like hundreds of dollars worth of groceries, out of the Schnucks in Ladue. And there was another woman that was, and this is the woman who was shot, behind her that grabbed items that had not been paid for, but she also had balloons. The officer who's now charged tries to arrest her, put her in cuffs. She breaks free. She's running. The officer yells at her to stop, and she says, "Taser, taser, taser." Then she fires her gun. So the storyline is that she mistakenly grabbed her gun instead of her taser. Well, I would say that that's pretty much a bad mistake. That's a bad mistake. Now, is she going to ever find herself in jail? First, I doubt it. I mean, Wesley Bell's coming in. He's got to file charges. He feels like it's important because it's a police officer. Maybe the facts do warrant charges in this case. He was asked a couple of questions.
She said she was going to use her taser, but then pulled for her weapon. Are you thinking that she either misspoke or told a lie in pulling her weapon? What do you think happened there?
Well, what's in the probable cause statement is our position, and there's evidence to suggest that she indicated she was going to deploy her taser. However, she pulled her service weapon and fired it one shot.
So was that a mistake or a
lie?
Well, it's not. These are the charges that we think are appropriate. And with the evidence that we have now, we believe that with respect to the elements of assault second, that the shooting was reckless.
Does it matter, Mr. Bell? I mean, regardless of whether she said things or not, she shot the woman.
Well,
is that the standard?
So, and I think it's a good question, and I was considering just reading the statutes. I think that'll shed some light.
All right, well, that's kind of boring. I'm not going to have him read the statutes. The bottom line here, though, is that there are charges. I didn't hear the news conference, so I'm going to have to go back and listen. Did anyone ask the question about the woman who was shot? Did she steal something? The family plays this off like, well, she's an innocent mom. She's got all these kids. She was simply buying balloons. If that's the case, why did she steal stuff from the cart, or is that just a lie? And why did she run from the officer? Now, I think there's perhaps mental illness and things like that could be involved. I don't know. But if we're just charging the cop for, I think the reporters are like, making a mistake, what about the shoplifter?
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
St. Louis's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio 1120, KMOX. Depend on it.
Well, we quite often talk about media bias, and especially the way that the mainstream media covers this president. I thought that Joel Kotkin had a very interesting perspective on this because he is not from my side of the political aisle. And he wrote a column about, you know, whether or not we're seeing the twilight of America's mass media. I thought it would be a great conversation to have. Joel Kotkin with me this afternoon. Hey, Joel, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
You know, I like Rolling Stone magazine for the music stuff, and I've always thought when we talk about media bias, I've included Rolling Stone and Vanity Fair, and, you know, everybody says, well, you got a radio show and Rush Limbaugh and all that. But when you talk about the landscape of the media, it's wider than ever before. But it's interesting because in the early part of your piece on the media, you quote Taibbi, who says that the Mueller report represents a death blow for the reputation of the American news media. That sort of surprised me coming from that source.
Well, and what's interesting is that this is not the only, he's not the only person who has seen it. What I find sometimes is the people maybe further on the left, you know, who are not part of the party infrastructure, like large parts of the media really are at this stage of the game, that they'll dissent. There's been some very excellent reporting in The Nation, for instance, on this as well. You know, I don't, when I'm trying to understand what's going on, yes, it, you know, sometimes the conservative media has some good points, but sometimes I say, well, you know, they have an axe to grind. But when I find that both the conservative media and the left media agree that the establishment media is wrong, that's kind of intriguing.
So I guess what happened here is, and we've seen this develop for the past 3 years, is that you have a situation where it's not the story necessarily that some of these reporters or editors, I think the editors have to be talked about here too, are really going for. They're just trying to bring down Trump.
Well, I think they're trying to bring down Trump, but I think it's really more pervasive than that. I mean, Trump has certainly sparked a level of ferocity among politicized journalists that, you know, probably we haven't seen at least since Nixon. The difference is that I think that the media is increasingly inhabited, particularly among the younger reporters and editors, by people whose concept of what journalism is about is just very different than the one I grew up with. And I work for, you know, many of the leading papers in the country. And the kind of lack of concern for even the appearance of objectivity, the unwillingness to talk to anybody who may break from the narrative.
Right, right. A primary example of that, I believe, would be climate change, because there are definitely people who aren't wacky and crazy who have a different opinion. They're not climate change deniers, but they have a different opinion of what's happening right now. And there is absolutely zero effort to. In fact, the opposite has happened. I forget which editorial board came out and said, we're not going to print anything from people who don't have our view of climate change.
Right. Well, and this is something actually, and living in California, you see this all the time, you know, that we may say, look, if you want to, what you're doing now, for instance, here in California, is we ranked 39th out of the states in reduction of GHG per capita last decade. well, hey, guys, it's not really working. And look at all the terrible things that have happened to middle and working class Californians as a result. Let's think about something else. Let's figure if there's other ways to approach this problem. And also to get ourselves out of this virtue signaling, California, for instance, can't, you know, California could fall into the ocean tomorrow. And yeah. It would have no impact at all on the climate.
No, that's right. Well, look, and I offer this example. The whole country could shut down, and it would whatever impact it would have on the climate would be reversed within a couple of years. If the entire country shuts down.
Well, because you know most of the emissions increases are taking place in China and India you know, countries. And look, I'm not going to get into an argument about, well, you know, they shouldn't be doing it. You know, the fact of the matter is, are we going to tell people in Mumbai that they can't have air conditioning? If anyone's spent time in Mumbai, you realize air conditioning is kind of nice. So the reality is that there are a whole series of issues, whether they involve gender, transgender, gay people, in some cases, Islamist groups that sort of achieve a kind of protected status and issues that you simply cannot raise. I mean, like, for instance, on climate change, there's a lawsuit by 200 civil rights leaders in California who, if they were claiming that oil companies were discriminatory, it would be on the front page. They can't get coverage. People who normally the California media would be all over, it's just you become a non-person. I mean, what we're seeing is that large parts of the media function with all the objectivity of the medieval Catholic Church.
I like that analogy. And look, I was trained in journalism. I was a news director and a reporter. And you've worked at many newspapers, as you said. This stuff didn't used to be allowed, no matter what your political opinions were, if you were the editor or the news director or the people calling the shots, let alone the reporters. And I think one of the things that's really fueled this outside of the Mueller report is we look at what happened to Brett Kavanaugh. And obviously, I'm approaching some of these from my perspective as a conservative, but I'm going to operate on those right now. And of course, I did this, Joel, when we were talking here, I just, you know, sort of Googled quickly what happened back at the march in D.C. a few months ago with Nathan Phillips and the young man from Kentucky. And you can still see a headline that says video shows MAGA-clad teenagers harassing mocking Native American Vietnam vet. That was from Slate, which absolutely misrepresents what happened that day.
Well, this is exactly what happens all the time. And look, I'm not a conservative. You know, I would call myself an old-fashioned Democrat. For your Missouri listeners, a Truman Democrat.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is that today, you know, literally, I think that young people are coming out of journalism schools not with the idea that the first job of a journalist writing op-eds. I'm talking about somebody reporting the news.
Right.
That person's job is to say, this is what happened, and here's maybe a couple of different ways of looking at what we're doing here. But the problem is that you get the journalists who think that they're editorial writers, but they're on the front page. So I'll pick up, let's say, a newspaper, New York Times, Washington Post, and take a look at the front page, and I say, this is an editorial. This isn't a news story. We used to have that kind of church and state separation, and that's completely gone. Look, journalists, like everybody else, have their prejudices, they have their leanings, some are more liberal, some are more conservative. That's certainly the case. But we were trained, and I would say the Post was where I got most of my training, at the Post, that you were supposed to report what was happening. And then if you were trying to get interpretation, you would go to one side, then the other. For instance, when you look at, let's say, the fires we had here in California, the party line was climate change. Well, I'm old enough to remember when there were horrific fires 40, 50 years ago. I did documentaries on the history of these disasters. Or that it might have had something to do with, as the Little Hoover Commission found, that it had to do with the forestry practices of the state, that was part of the problem.
Yeah, well, and also, there's this issue with, this is something that happens here in the Midwest, Joel, with tornadoes, you know, in the devastation of tornadoes, which is not related to climate change at all. And that's been debunked. But look, you still hear repeated claims of that. But what happens is you got a lot more people living in these areas where tornadoes used to drop down in this country. There's homes there now.
Well, and the same thing, let's say, with fires.
You have
people living in areas that were rural areas, and by the way, where many times rural people were smart enough to know that, you know, let's get rid of the brush, you know, they didn't have this kind of effect. It's the fact that people are just brought up with these sort of ideas, and they're imprinted on them, and you can't move them from it. I mean, and so what we end up with is, you know, frankly, these discussions between two different people who are yelling at each other and not listening. But the media has contributed to this by delegitimizing large parts of whether it's the scientific community or economists or social thinkers, whatever you want to say. If you don't follow the party line, you're not considered to be a legitimate voice.
Right.
So you can take people who have a career, let's say, whether it's in climate change or let's say on issues of ethnicity and race, and you can just say their points of view have no place in the discussion. We're not going to talk to them. We're not going to interview them. Now, look, there are some great reporters still at the New York Times. Some of them are friends of mine. There are still great reporters, I'm sure, at the Washington Post. But over time, the media is moving into this direction where I really almost have to read, for instance, the New York Times or the Washington Post the way criminologists used to read Pravda. Like, oh, I wonder what the Politburo is really thinking. And so I'm going to get some sort of indication, like, you know, well, the establishment's getting worried about things. Like, you know, I'm almost sure at some point we're going to start to see at the Post and the New York Times growing cries about, you know, the Democrats are going too far to the left and that could re-elect Trump.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll see that.
I mean, you know, Bezos is going to go after Bernie. He's probably going to go after Elizabeth Warren because, you know, they want progressivism, but not progressivism that goes into their wallets.
Well, look, whether or not we can reverse this trend with media, we'll save that for another, you know, 5-week conversation. Joel Kotkin, good stuff. I agree with you completely, and it's interesting to have your perspective because obviously different from mine politically. Always great to have you on KMOX. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
You know, the old guard of journalism really does feel, I think, the way that Joel does, depending or no matter what side of the aisle they're in. It's the new guard that doesn't seem very concerned about that. And what he said about the New York Times and the Washington Post at the end there, I think, is very important because if they feel, and this is just not how journalism should work. Talk shows can work that way. I'm paid for my opinion. Editorial boards can work that way. It's about opinions. But the choices of what stories to cover shouldn't be dependent upon which candidate you want to be elected to any office. And that's what's happening at those big newspapers and even CNN these days. We know that.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.